Hello, friends. I am Cindy Thompson, and this is a Resilience Project. This is a space where stories are shared and possibilities are discovered. I invite you to partner with me in cultivating resilience among humans, one conversation at a time. Some of us develop our resilience through several smaller events and challenges, while others learn from the bigger or traumatic events. In fact, it helps to recognize that we are steadily building our resilience each time we survive a loss, learn something new, or adapt in times of change. The secret is that resilience isn't about getting stronger, but getting smarter. As humans, we rely on many coping strategies to manage our stress and discomfort. Some of these strategies serve us really well, while others can add to our stress, make things harder in the long run, and maybe even leave us isolated. Unfortunately, it isn't until we hit a wall or experience a life-changing event that we might notice patterns that are working against us. As a high achiever, my guest this week would suggest that she spent most of her life needing to be in control. Finding value in productivity and perfection, vulnerability and interdependence were not in her frame of reference. It wasn't until Joanne Green was in a freak accident that left her helpless and no longer in control of her circumstances that she discovered her true power. With a long radio and television career, Joanne has expanded her creative gifts into writing her most recent memoir, By Accident. Because we sometimes realize what we need by accident, Joanne speaks to releasing yourself from unrealistic expectations and finding freedom in the unknown. Here is my conversation with Joanne. Joanne, I am so grateful that you are joining me today on a Resilience Project.
I'm so glad there is a Resilience Project.
Me too. I feel like together in this conversation, we are helping to cultivate resilience in others and inspiring people to realize the importance and the value of it. I am aware, you know, over the last couple of years that I've been doing this, that some people come into awareness of their resilience practices very slowly with several events over their lives, while others might have a major event that happens that is a bit of a wake-up call. Which would you say has been your experience?
A series of wake-up calls.
Okay.
I would say I've always been someone who tends toward being a little on the anxious side. So I think I very naturally developed some tools, even as a child, using my imagination, singing to myself, talking to myself. And I think those are resilience tools as well. As I've told my kids when raising them, you are who you are. You come into this world with really a blueprint, and there will be influences on you, but basically your job is to figure out how to be the best you.
Mm.
If you have certain challenges, which we all do, it is in our best interests to get to know ourselves, to accept ourselves, and then to acquire the tools to allow us to best thrive.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a number of times in my life where I have come up against challenges that were bigger than any I had been through before. When I was 17, I developed an eating disorder. And now we know what eating disorders are because they are very much mainstreamed. But in 1971, first of all, there was no term eating disorder. I absolutely needed to become very resilient so as not to die. It was a life or death situation then. That was my first encounter with learning some practices that I knew would benefit me. Doesn't mean I always did them, but I learned them. Maybe a couple of years after that, I began doing yoga, and yoga has been a practice throughout my life. But now, at this point in my life, I'm vigilant about it because I see the value. I would also say that I had a series of losses. My mother, my sister, and my brother all passed away within a four-year period, and grief is unbelievably debilitating. It's also something that we'll all go through.
Mm-hmm.
One time or another, learning how to move through that. When you think about resilience, it's really everything. How do you have a marriage without resilience tools? How do you have friendships? How do you function in the workplace with bosses of all varying degrees? These are life skills.
Agreed. I often talk about my kids being one of my early resilience stories because there's such a learning curve. And if anybody's going to test us and make us really reflect on why we respond the way we do, it will be our kids. They're going to push all the buttons.
That's their job. I find in life that we often get the lessons we need, the opportunities to learn are right there as long as we can see them and take advantage of them. And I joked about that, my second son, I wasn't an overly patient person. And I had to learn to be patient.
Bless his heart. Another opportunity to practice. Joanne, when we first spoke, you had also suggested that you really had a desire for control in life, that you really were someone inclined to want to manage things and have as much influence over what was happening. Tell me about that part and what you learned there.
In retrospect, I think that I always felt safer in control. For instance, I like to be behind the wheel of the car. I don't like to be a passenger. I felt like if I could control things, things would go my way. Now, I want to say, I think this is an illusion. I learned this over time. Control is a very seductive illusion, but an illusion nonetheless. And I think that some of it was really about wanting things to go my way and not trusting that I could roll with the punches if things didn't go my way.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a serious car accident in 2012, and I went from being this hyper-functioning person who controlled things to suddenly not being able to control anything. Having my control stripped from me suddenly without warning and so fully was devastating and forced me to develop many new skills.
Sometimes life has a way of doing that. It'll come along. And if we're not learning that lesson, somehow life or the universe, whatever people believe, will give us an opportunity to learn it in a much deeper way. You're hit by a car as a pedestrian. You had quite significant injuries. Tell us about them.
I was crossing the street. It was in broad daylight. I was in a crosswalk. A car stopped for me. I got directly in front of her and heard what sounded like an explosion and felt myself airborne. The reason it sounded like an explosion was because there was no sound of screeching brakes. It was just the sound of the smash. A truck had come at 50 miles an hour behind her. She was at a full stop. He slammed into her. She hit me. Thankfully, she was driving a sedan, which meant that I was hit on my hip rather than if she'd been driving an SUV, I would have been hit probably at my shoulder. So I flew up rather than going under the car where I most assuredly would have been killed. The car was then catapulted 50 feet down the street and I slipped off onto the street. I never lost consciousness. I was in shock at the beginning. I noted that I was alive. I remember that very distinctly. That began my journey toward wholeness, and it was extremely traumatic. I had four pelvic fractures, and all the soft tissue on the right side of my body was crushed. Also, a concussion, but that was minor in comparison to the other injuries. Then the trauma of reliving the accident and having being terrified of cars and going out into the street. But I was laid up for a very long time. The full recovery took a year and a half, and I'm happy to say it was a complete recovery. I have no residual damage, but I learned a lot of how to be still and how to relinquish control and how to trust that other people are going to do it. It might not be my way, but it's going to be a way. I was in no position to criticize how anyone did anything because I couldn't do anything for myself. Ultimately, I decided to write a book about all of this because I would hope that people can learn some of these lessons without being hit by a car.
Great point. What stands out for me, Joanne, is that you had suggested there had been various events in your life that still were quite significant, as life will offer us, and yet there were still some lessons to be learned. And it's a reminder that we can have several resilience practices But we have to keep building those practices because what served you up until that point, we're still leaving some gaps in your resilience practice.
I would emphasize the word practice because practice implies that it's something you're doing all the time. You're always getting better at it. You have to reinforce the behaviors. I love that word practice. I would also say that our job is to continue growing throughout life. Just a really short story. My mom was 90 and I was trying to share with her that I was depressed. My sister was dying of cancer. My mom had one thing after another. I was in perimenopause, which means fewer resources to draw upon. My children were in their teens and early 20s and having all kinds of crises. And I tried to share with my mom that I was depressed and that I was going to go into therapy and take some medication per my doctor's recommendation. She said, "You? What do you have to be depressed about? You have this, you're healthy, you have a great career, your children are wonderful, you have a great marriage, you have nothing to be depressed about. Your sister has things to be depressed about."
Wow.
This was not a new behavior on her part. And I went back to my therapist who said, "There is a way to help your mom understand that's not helpful." And we did some role playing and I went back and my mom was 9 years old. And I said, "Mom, when I tell you that I'm depressed, I'm sure that makes you sad." She said, "Yes, I'm sure you feel like you wish there was something you could do to make my pain go away." She said, "I do." I said, "That's all you need to say. I don't have a right to my feelings. I'm absolutely not choosing to be depressed. No one ever chooses to be depressed. If you just say, 'I'm sorry that you're feeling badly,' that will be helpful to me." And there she was at 90. She learned it. And for the next 2 years of her life, she never did that again.
What a gift that you could have that conversation with your mom and to have the courage to go back and help her learn what you needed.
She was my role model. And so I have vowed to keep learning until the day I die. And so when my sons say to me, "You don't have to solve this problem. I'm just sharing what I'm going through with you." They're adults now, 37 and 40 years old. "This is not yours to solve." I channel that moment where I said to my mom, "Just hold my pain, hold my frustration." And I now say to my sons, "That must be really rough."
It's like a gift you give them just to hold that space to hear it and not have to solve it. I love that in terms of the courage of conversations, the courage of leaning into relationships and investing in them so that people know how to help us.
It's very important to be clear. And sometimes we say too much or we hurt someone's feelings, and then you still have an opportunity to go back and fix it.
Joanne, what are some of the practices that might have even helped you as you went into those injuries from the accident?
Even as the accident was happening, and I was literally flying through the air and smashing into the windshield of this woman's car, my entire self was going, "Really? Really? Now this? After everything I've been through?" And immediately upon asking that question of the universe or God, I said, "All right, let's do this." And I think "let's do this" was a reflection of the fact that I felt like I have been to hell and back and I can do it and I can do anything. I have an inner survivor. I have an inner survivor, not only because of what I've endured in my life at all of the various junctures, but because of my DNA. My grandparents were immigrants. They left a country where they were being persecuted and came here with nothing, not speaking the language, having no skills in particular to be able to support themselves. That's deep in my constitution. And I think we all have that kind of thing to draw upon. No matter where our ancestors came from, we can look toward the strength in our past, the role models we've encountered along the way. I have seen so many young people who come from very dysfunctional homes, but found role models and said, "Yeah, that's the kind of thing I want." My daughter-in-law at age 15, she was a good friend of my son's, told me that she was going to marry him one day. And I joked and said, "Don't you think you should date first?" And she said, Yeah, but not in high school. That would ruin it. We went on to talk about the reasons that she thought he would be a perfect husband for her someday. And she said, in addition to he's smart, he's funny, he's great with kids, you and your husband are deeply respectful of each other. You are good friends. You work together. You laugh together. You adore each other. That's what your son knows, and that's what he will do. She had grown up in a home where she didn't get that, but she saw it in us and said, that's what I want, and I'm going to build a life like that. I think when we talk about resilience, we talk about being able to spot behaviors that you want to emulate, looking at people who are doing it right and saying, what is it that they're doing? And how can I adopt some of those behaviors? Maybe that would work for me too. I had an inner confidence that whatever would happen, and I feel this way today, I got this. I can do this. And it became my mantra throughout my recovery. I can do this. And the accident wasn't the last thing that happened to me that was traumatizing. There were three more things, which is why I had to write a book, because it was like the hits just kept on coming. And I kept having opportunities to practice these skills.
I can hear it even in your language as seeing them not just as challenges, but opportunities to practice. And that your mindset already set you up for the ability to see the gifts that he's within.
Not necessarily the moment when you get the cancer diagnosis. I want to make sure I don't come off as someone who gets smashed in the head and goes, oh, this is great. Now I'm going to learn how to deal with a head injury. No, it's not like that at all. You do get to feel sorry for yourself for some amount of time. But as a good friend of mine said to me, you can visit the pity pot, but don't be packing your bags and moving in. You get to cry and you get to feel through the pain or the grief or the loss or whatever it is. And then you pull yourself up by the bootstraps and you take a look at what you're grateful for. That to me was probably the strongest tool in my toolbox was gratitude. My mom always said, and your mom probably did too, count your blessings. And we rolled our eyes. And the fact of the matter is, it works. When you're counting your blessings, when you are literally enumerating all the things for which you are grateful, you can't feel badly for yourself at the same time. It knocks it out.
Yeah, I really appreciate your mentioning that because there's this balance of honoring and accepting what's just happened, because that is part of the resilience practice. But like you said, not unpacking there and landing there forever. But you give yourself a window to grieve or to honor some of the challenges in this moment, but at the same time, keep moving forward and always be looking at it from that lens of, okay, what next? So what now?
Fear is a big one. I think fear trips us up so often. What if I never get better? What if I'm going to be using a walker for the rest of my life? These were questions that floated through my brain. And then this is another tool that I learned somewhere along the way, but before the accident, is that a thought or is that reality? Okay, what I just said, that is not a fact. That is me speculating, worst case scenario. Does that serve me? No, it's useless. I can go down that road. I can spin an entire story about the 22 complications that can happen with this cancer diagnosis, envision myself losing all my hair and vomiting endlessly. But in fact, I don't know that I'm going to need chemo. All I know is what I know. And what I know is I have to have surgery. That's all I know. So why don't I stay with that? Remain with the facts. Don't spin out with the fears.
That is really rich, because if we trust in ourselves, like you said, you already had come into some of these events knowing that you can get through it. You have been acknowledging and remembering those strengths. You already have what you need to get through this next thing. So then you maybe worry a little bit less, but that's human, isn't it? To just naturally be worried about what else is yet to come when you've had so many things happening to you.
Our minds just take off on their own. Monkey mind. I love that expression. It's the what ifs. It's the circular thinking. It's the downward spiral. We do this to ourselves as humans, but here's the thing I learned. I don't know if other people can learn it by hearing me say it or if they have to learn it on their own, but what I learned is you can control your thoughts. You can tell yourself what to think. It doesn't control you. When your brain starts to do that, and it will, you can stop and say, is this the message I want to be giving myself? If my friend or my loved one were verbalizing this line of thinking out loud, would I support it? Oh, I would say, wait a minute. What I was saying earlier, what do we know? What's going to make you feel better here? You can make yourself feel better with self-talk, positive self-talk.
This is so good, Joanne, because the reason I like to interview people on their personal stories is we get to capture the learning you've been acquiring over the course of your life. I'm curious who your mentors have been, because I can hear some strong influences coming through in your learning.
I suppose I've been in therapy a number of different times in my life, usually fairly short term. I think I learned a lot there. Spirituality through meditation. I meditate a couple times a week at least, not every day, more than I ever did before, certainly. That has allowed me the opportunity to pause before reacting. It's given me that sort of extra breath. Mindfulness in general, noticing what I feel, noticing what's around me. It's not so much individual people that have been mentors so much as it's been teaching. My faith, I'm a practicing Jew. And while I rejected it as a teenager and in my 20s, I came back to it later in my life and have made it a practice to continue to study and to continue to look to the wisdom of the sages. They can be in any tradition. I just happen to be Jewish because I was born Jewish. And there are many extraordinary traditions and teachings that I draw upon and always have. Things that might speak to me at one moment in my life would not have resonated at all at another point. There was one moment when I was recovering from the accident, a friend sent me a book of Psalms. This was a reinterpretation. A woman had rewritten Psalms that would make them more palatable, more relatable to modern audiences. And I glanced at it at first and I was like, Psalms? Nothing like that had ever spoken to me before. I began to sob and cry because it's very much about resilience and it's clearly something ancient. It's Debbie Perlman, who is no longer with us, but she wrote Psalms for a New Day. Sit beside me, O Eternal, comfort my soul. Recall to me my cherished memories to bring me forward through adversity, to stretch from then to now to beyond, beckoning to a future you will guard. Walk beside me, O Eternal, comfort my soul. Help me find the broken pieces, gathering them to my trembling hand, raw materials for my future life. Let me find your hand in this design. Wrap me in your healing light. Wrap me in your healing care.
It's gorgeous.
At another point in my life, I would have been like, yeah, yeah. But at that moment, it was the precise message. You can find help in all kinds of places. Friends who I would never have thought would be the person who would really comfort me, and other friends whom I adore, but they have so much energy that they came into the room like a whirlwind and I felt unsafe because my body was so broken. You have to be open-minded and open-hearted.
Agreed. I think of it like building blocks, even as I listen, Joanne, that your early life experiences gave you some tools that you were ready to accept and integrate into your life. And then whether it was when you had an eating disorder or at different stages of grief, when you had all the losses within a short span, you just kept adding to that toolkit as opposed to, oh, I have enough. I'll just rely on what I have. But to see it as something we are always building on. And recognizing that we are ready to hear different things at different times in our lives and to learn from those around us makes me wonder about that sort of need to be independent when you were younger rather than relying on the wisdom of others and letting others teach you and share their wisdom at this stage. Do I hear that distinction?
Yeah, I was an accident. The title of my book is actually double meaning. My parents were in their 40s. They had a 13-year-old and an 8-year-old, and then I was a whoops baby. I never quite felt like I fit in to my family. Also, my mother, my sister, and my brother were all very linear thinkers. They were math majors. My mom was a bookkeeper. They were very black and white. They were all Scorpios, all three of them.
Wow.
I was this imaginative, creative, color outside the lines only kid. I was more like my dad, but my dad had a neurological disorder from the time I was 5. And so he was really compromised. I really felt alone in many ways. And I was on a continual search for intimacy and just didn't get enough of what I felt I needed and acted out in all sorts of ways. I think that may be what you're hearing between the lines is I always was optimistic. I wanted to be an actress because I didn't know who I was and I wanted to embody all these other people.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you're the most Joanne now than you ever have been?
100%. Absolutely. People talk about aging and how difficult it is to age. My siblings didn't have an opportunity to age, and I am so fortunate that I am getting to age. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, I earned all these wrinkles. This is a time in my life where I'm more secure than ever before in terms of who I am and what I know to be true, and my values are really cemented in, and I can choose people to surround myself with who make me laugh and make me think and make me grow. I think this stage of life is the best. Also, I'm lucky that I'm healthy. I have to always say that. I have faced a lot of medical stuff, and right this minute, I am in great shape. Super grateful for that. I think that people need to really embrace retirement. Of course, I'm busier than I ever was. On the one hand, I call it retirement. On the other hand, it's a joke.
If you could say something to your younger self and you can pick the phase of life, what would you want to say to that, Joanne?
I think I really said, you know what? This too shall pass. It was another one of those adages, like count your blessings, that I would roll my eyes at when my mom would say it. She always said it, this too shall pass. It was like, when? But in fact, in the moment when you're suffering, but you have the sense that you're going to get through this, one way or another, be it a work challenge, be it a physical challenge, be it depression, nothing stays the same. Change is constant. And so whatever it is, all things must pass, like George Harrison said, and things do, and breathe through it.
Great advice. Sometimes we feel like there's a book inside of us and we just got to put it down. But that experience of sitting with your thoughts and putting it to paper, I'm curious what that journey has been like for you and what you discovered about Joanne along the way.
I'm a short attention span kind of gal. My career was in radio broadcasting where you write it, you say it, it's gone. Nobody gets to pore over it and make sure the grammar was okay. It's just out there in the ether. And I'd never written anything long form and really very little for print publication over my career, but I'd always been a writer. It was an absolutely daunting process. I think I do so much that I'm not a perfectionist in making sure that my end product is perfect before I go on to the next thing. I didn't have a choice with this. I stuck with it. I had copy editors, proofreaders, developmental editors. To write a book and be able to say, yep, that's it right there. Now, could I rewrite it 12 more times? Of course. I'm proud of the shape it is in now. I signed off on it as we speak at the printer. I've completed the audiobook. The ebook is coming out. It's all going to happen. And I can't believe that I kept my attention span on one project for 5+ years and saw it to completion. Partnered with all sorts of other people to make it happen. I don't know how to design a book cover. My husband is my producer and he recorded the audiobook. It's 5.5 hours. It's a whole book. It's crazy, but I feel proud that I've captured so much about my loved ones who are no longer here. My brother and sister's children and grandchildren and future generations can read about them and know how extraordinary they were and know a little bit about the lives that they led.
It's like a legacy. It's like another child that you are birthing at this time, and to reflect some of the experiences in your life and maybe what you'd want them to know.
Absolutely. You know me when you read this book. I have no secrets. I have borne my soul.
Wow. When I think about that person who really needed control, to be able to be that vulnerable, to put it all out there, that sounds like a lot of growth that's happened over time that allowed you to actually be prepared for this.
Yeah. Why keep things to oneself? It's all about stories. I think that's how we learn. If I can share my story and it can benefit one person out there, one person, and it already has. I had a friend who had a surgery and she was having a really hard time accepting the way her husband was taking care of things. I let her read an early version of the book and she said, oh my God, you'd helped me so much. I was able to just say, okay, whatever he's doing, it's good enough. It's good enough.
So good. I am curious, if control tries to show up today, what is the one area that you have the most difficulty letting go of?
Good question. Eating and spending money. The little tiny vestige of the eating disorder is that now I have a whole paradigm. It has to be, I don't eat meat anymore. There's a lot of control around food. And the other is money. I didn't grow up with very much. There was always a feeling of scarcity. And at any point, my dad wouldn't be able to work and we wouldn't have enough money. And then my husband's and my careers were in broadcasting, which is the least stable industry in the world. You could lose your job at any moment for any reason or no reason. This sense of scarcity and knowing when to be freer and spend money, I think those are the issues where control comes into play in my life.
If it's feeling too scratchy, what's the indicator you notice first?
If I realize that I'm not even allowing myself to figure out what I would want to order on the menu, or when looking for clothing, because I think somehow I should only buy it if I'm getting a bargain. It's more like telling myself, if I buy this thing, if I indulge in this way, if I book this trip, is this going to really make a difference in my life if I spend this money, if I eat this hot fudge sundae? The answer is always no. That's where I just let it go. I love that song from Frozen that Elsa sings, Let It Go, Let It Go. It's my theme song.
I bet it is. Joanne, just for the listeners to hear that this is an ongoing way in which we live our lives. It's not one and done. Just because you are at this stage of life, as human beings, we are battling fears. We are battling challenges. Even if in the absence of anything major, like a car accident, we will create challenges for ourselves. We will create our own storms that will just bring along that bit of tension when life is almost going too smoothly. I really appreciate your willingness to share some of the ways in which it still shows up for the listeners to hear that even for yourself, who's written this book, who has been practicing, who has these great practices, it is ongoing and something you need to be mindful of too. I can relate totally to the shopping bit. I am a total thrift shopper.
Cindy, isn't this why we have children? So they can point out our flaws?
Yes. Who knew that's why we had children?
They see them so acutely.
Yeah. Maybe it's payback.
I guess.
You have been giving us several resilience practices all the way through this great conversation. I'm curious if there's anything you would have liked to have mentioned that we've missed.
Humor. Laughing is key. Surround yourself with people who make you laugh. Read funny things. See funny movies. Laughter is the best medicine. Yeah, that's true. Really important. Nature. Get out in nature. The natural world is so healing. Take a walk. Human beings were not created to sit in chairs. We were meant to be moving. Get out there. Have experiences. Appreciate beauty. See art. Listen to music that you love. Drink water. Fight racism. There are so many things.
There's lots of things we do have control over in our lives, and that is our well-being. If we just focused on that and the things that help us feel better.
This is a big one. Take care of other people. Make that phone call when something pops through your mind about somebody who's in chemo or somebody who's recently lost a parent. Call them. You will feel better. Send a text if you don't want to call. Just reach out, give back.
That's a really good final reminder on one of your practices that you have learned to trust. So as we get ready to close, Joanne, what is one word that would describe you today?
Optimistic.
Nice.
My cup is overflowing.
It's a message of hope. You've been through a lot. You didn't let it crater you, and you just kept rising. You just kept pressing on, and you are now able to enjoy a beautiful phase of life that you didn't know would come. You didn't know what that would look like. And we can't always anticipate tomorrow, but it's a great message of hope.
I am very well aware that at any moment, the tide could turn. I'm going to milk it as long as I can and say yes to the joy, say yes to the good experiences, the adventures. I'm going to take risks, but within reason, because I don't want to be injured and break more bones, and Lord knows I will. But I'm going to know that these are the things that make me feel whole and full and grateful. And no matter what happens to me in my life, I can still practice some of these rituals.
Fantastic. I've had this opportunity to experience your energy, to get a little bit of that vibe that makes up Joanne Green that has carried you through all of those events in your life. I am really grateful to be able to be in conversation with you today, to be able to share this with others and share that a little bit of that sweet charisma that you have within you that we get to share with many.
Wonderful. And in addition to the book, I have a podcast that's just 3 minutes in length called This Story with Joanne Green. And they're micro memoir, very short essays from all different parts of my life. Another podcast that I do is called All the F Words.
I'm glad we got that in. I have no doubt they're going to want to follow you and learn more. So thank you for being here today, Joanne.
Thank you so much for having me, Cindy. And thanks for the work that you do. I think it makes the world a better place.
My pleasure. One of the quotes that stand out for me from this episode is that if you look close enough, we sometimes get the lessons we need. Joanne has had a lifetime of building blocks in growing her resilience. As she mentioned, the accident became one of the lessons that she needed to learn at that time. Even though we are all resilient, what served us for a time may not have given us the tools that we need for the current challenges we are facing now. Whether it meant recovering from an eating disorder, navigating depression, facing the loss of several family members, or the accident, Joanne has been given many opportunities to let it go. With so many great ideas for our resilience practice, I decided to create a few themes from our conversation. Mindset was one of the tools that Joanne referred to. To be checking on our perspective when faced with adversity, Joanne suggested that choosing a mantra that is strength-based can encourage you. One of her mantras was, "I can do this." To remember that you can control your thoughts. Just notice what kind of beliefs you initially have and then choose how you would like to respond. Because fear is likely to appear in uncomfortable circumstances, you can filter some of your worries by asking yourself if that is a thought or a fact. She also spoke about role models. To draw on the practices of those doing it right and asking yourself how you might integrate some of those practices. Surround yourself with people who make you laugh. Say yes to joy. Watch a funny movie. Listen to music. And find ways to tap into things that bring you joy. Joanne also suggested that it's okay to have a pity party for a short time, which allows you to acknowledge and accept the reality of the situation. But we don't want you to land there for long. Keep moving forward and remember what you are grateful for, even in the darkest moments. Communication is also another piece. Communicate what you need to those around you. Remember, the person you are speaking with can't read your mind. Find ways to have those courageous conversations. This too is a practice, so it is okay if you don't always get it right. You can always go back and fix it, so start somewhere. I hope that you're going to check out Joanne's memoir, By Accident, as she reveals some of the lessons, insights, and memories of her lived experience. As suggested by Joanne, we can accept adversities as opportunities or an inconvenience. It's up to us. Inspired by this great conversation, here are a couple of questions and a quote for you to consider. First of all, what would you like your mantra to be when faced with a new challenge or unexpected event? And who are your mentors in your life that you can learn from? If you currently can't think of anybody that you have in your close circle, I invite you to intentionally pursue someone and ask them to be in your circle. Plan a time to meet them for coffee. The quote that I wanted to share with you is by Jeanette Winterson on the process of life. Jeanette Winterson suggests, "We live in a society that peddles solutions, whether it's solutions to those extra pounds you're carrying, or to your thinning hair, or to your loss of appetite, loss of love. We are always looking for solutions, but actually, what we are engaged in is a process throughout life during which you never get it right. You have to keep being open. You have to keep moving forward. You have to keep finding out who you are and how you are changing. And only that makes life tolerable." As we continue to grow our resilience community, I hope you will check out the masterclass that I am offering. This is a space where we are developing your well-being through evidence-based practices. If you are ready to maintain a healthier balance in life, find more joy, and trust that you can kick adversity to the curb, go to our Resilience Project website and click on the masterclass link. We will be sure to include the link in the show notes. And remember, friends, adversity is inevitable, while resilience is a practice. Thank you for listening to this episode of A Resilience Project. We would not be doing this podcast without you. If you or someone you know has an inspirational story or is helping to build resilience in their community, please email me at cindy@aresilienceproject.com. In fact, email me either way. I would love to hear from you. My hope is to feature an episode periodically on your letters of resilience. I'm very interested in hearing your story of how you have tackled hard things and what worked for you. With your permission, I hope to share some of these stories along the way with our listeners. Also, check out my website, aresilienceproject.com, to learn more about our amazing guests. Your presence here is important because together we are cultivating a village of resilient individuals. You are creating a space for their stories to be shared and a sacred space for learning to occur. I also have a favor. I would love for you to go to your preferred podcast platform, rate and review the podcast so that we will know how we're doing. I also would like to express my gratitude to the amazing team of volunteers that have jumped on board to support this project. You will find each of those beautiful people on my website on the team page. As you go about this week, I invite you to think about one way that you can continue to grow your resilient muscle. What is one thing you can start with today? See you next week.